It's time to walk on.
Walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on.
The Potakin Center for Contemplative Walking is breaking new trails in the exploration of walking as a contemplative activity. Our Walk On podcasts introduce the people who are leading this exploration and the people who are doing contemplative walking themselves.
Walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on, walk on.
In this episode of Walk On, Karina Folo from University of Toronto tells us about her introduction to labyrinth walking.
Group walking at Trinity Square Labyrinth. What happens when the journey is more important than the destination? Group walking and labyrinth walking are seemingly contradictory undertakings. On one hand, walking with others introduces new elements, from differing paces to moods to ways of viewing the external world. It is dynamic, not only through maneuvering sidewalks built comfortably for three at most, but also in the search for common conversation. Labyrinths diverge in that they force single-file movement, leaving little room for even an attempt at equal footing. Someone will always be at the front, corralled by lines that the mind cannot jaywalk. Labyrinth walking is hence not designed to be a group activity. Since its beginnings, it has been used mainly for individual mindfulness and religious contemplation. So, the endeavor to participate in a group walk via an individualized type of journey was both difficult and unique. At first, there was no apparent benefit to combining these two forms of walking, as my mind was too distracted by the gestures of others to focus on contemplation, while meaningful dialogue was prevented by the inability to see the faces of my cohort. However, a shift occurred midway through the ascent into the labyrinth, in which it felt as if the pounding of feet and turns of the patterned stones merged into a rhythm. This shift marked the realization that the two forms of walking are not so different after all. Both group and labyrinth walking are focused more on the experience rather than the significance of the set-out destination. Rambling through streets alongside peers makes one forget the where or whys of travel, just as the center of a labyrinth is nothing if one does not calibrate their mind and body through the twists and turns of rock. Through this similarity comes the realization that, on every scale, walking matters because it validates the importance of traveling, of journeys, and of living in the moment you are given. Before the two walking practices can be understood together, they must be appreciated apart. This appreciation, though, is somewhat lacking in regard to group walking. Many philosophers on the subject deny that walking should ever be done as an assembly of individuals, that solitude is better on a walk because you cannot read the book of nature without being perpetually put to the trouble of translating it for the benefit of others. Perhaps for purposes of creative thinking or escapism, this statement has merit. However, walking is not only a catalyst to philosophy, it can be understood beyond oneself, reaching into the external world as a means of connecting the soul to its environment. In particular, I noticed this feeling of unitedness as I strode the streets of downtown Toronto with two friends and classmates. While the purpose of our walk was supposed to be reaching the labyrinth and formulating profound questions for its center, conversation revolved around anything but. Instead, our walk was an ebb and flow of both observations of our surroundings and tangents to personal life. The murals of Dundas became anecdotes from life back home, just as thrift stores became places to visit, and libraries reflections of memorable all-nighters. In this way, familiarity with the city grew alongside a progression of friendship, culminating in a sense that the act of walking with others fulfilled some greater purpose. The crowds of people swarming past no longer felt intimidating or impermeable, for I was within a pack myself, surrounded by recognizable faces. While walking alone at times feels alienating, as if one observes others from behind some kind of abstract barrier, group walking, especially with those one is close to, gives the impression of self-worth, as if one rightfully occupies a valued place when they stride alongside someone else. As a result, the group walk highlighted the different, but pleasant, experience of managing interaction while striding towards a destination that became less important as conversation evolved. The overall process moved away from introspection and instead connected to the external realm of others and space. These connections became the highlight of the walk, contributing to the prominence of excursion over arrival. Upon entering the labyrinth, it became clear that continuing our discussion of the man singing loudly in Yonge and Dundas Square was not an appropriate subject for such an intense expedition. As I fell into stride behind a train of others, I did not feel contemplative. My thoughts were beyond the enclosure of trees, instead out on the street where stimuli overwhelmed the senses and my mind worked in every direction imaginable. I felt the need to talk. I examined how surreal it was that less than 50 meters to our right was one of Canada's largest malls, but it fell flat, for labyrinth navigation is not about the external. Lines are placed to guide the feet so the mind can focus on nourishing itself. This was not the time to engage with the environment, and so in the opening minutes of winding, it felt as if there could not be two more polar opposite forms of walking than that of groups and labyrinths. It was not until I noticed a pigeon hopping over and across labyrinth stones that I came to realize the one important similarity between the two. For the pigeon was free. There were no constraints on movement, as there was no recognition of confining a trajectory to find oneself. Labyrinth walking would serve no purpose for an organism devoted to the goals of reproduction and survival. Yet we were not obligated to follow the lines either. The two-dimensional structure of a labyrinth differs from mazes, as it is possible to trespass set areas. However, no one does this, because simply being present at the center of a labyrinth is not the point. Much like group walking, the destination is of relative unimportance compared to the process of contemplating either your surroundings or deepest questions as you travel. Through this new lens, the pounding of multiple sets of feet became a rhythm for which I could direct my thoughts along, as opposed to a distraction, and the two merged as complements to each other. Once at the center, everything felt in balance. As the work the body and mind had to do to arrive, each contributed significance that can only be appreciated in retrospect. As I had only just begun to appreciate labyrinth walking upon reaching the center, I spent relatively little time soaking up the feelings of stability and peace that the middle brings. Eager to compare walking to the center as a group and walking it alone, I departed in solitude, this time with my question in mind to ponder as I went. I found the experience to be linear, that, unlike group walking, there were no additional variables to consider. My gaze turned downward to make sure the stones were being followed, and as a result, my mind was free from the incitements of nature and other people. I came closer to my resolution with each turn of the feet, and by the time I exited, I felt satisfied. Everything came naturally when I walked the labyrinth in solitude, but more importantly, my realizations did not occur once I arrived, but rather in the process of arriving. To conclude, group walks and completing a labyrinth are fundamentally very different forms of navigation. Rooting oneself through throngs of people when surrounded by their own crowd replaces meditative properties of walking with a kinship to place and others. Contrastingly, labyrinths, being one of the first forms of structured meditative walking, focus on allowing individuals to naturally come to analysis of the self without the need for external stimulus. However, both utilize the mechanism of placing more significance on the experiences felt on the path to an objective rather than that objective itself. As a result, both forms convey the universal appeal of walking being a motion that is therapeutic just by placing one foot in front of the other and not worrying about how or when any goal will be achieved.
You've been listening to another Walk On podcast presented by the Podokan Center for Contemplative Walking. Check out our growing library of videos and podcasts, enjoy our Tumblr photo essays, and visit our Facebook page. All those links can be found on our website at podokan.com. If you have a walking story to share, let us know. We'd love to hear about your experience. I'm Enan Ray Parcello. Thanks for listening and walk on.